Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. It's 2 p.m. Eastern, the 24th of April, 2020. And I'm back in the book called The Talmud of Emmanuel, which is basically there was a scroll that was written by Judas Iscariot that documented the life of a man named Emmanuel. The Meyer information teaches that Emmanuel was the real name of the person that we call Jesus today. But what was written and documented in the New Testament was very confused and very misunderstood. What I'm going to be covering today, I'm going to read again. I feel compelled to read. I hope it isn't a bother or a problem with people. But let me start here, and then maybe we'll get into some commentary. Explanation. Reference is made here to a purely physical lineage, and not the traceable family tree, relates to the fact that the original Habranos people, that is, the Hebiru people, consisted of human beings cobbled together from different countries and not a real people. Very few of them in this society had a real family tree to exhibit, since there was an uncontrolled mixing among the Habranos. An actual typical Habranoic people, that is, a typical Habranoic clan, has never existed. The original primal ancestors of the God believers first formed a loose community about 12,000 years ago, which was called Habranos, when it was not until around 4,500 BC that a more firm community originated from this, from which the so-called Hebrew people eventually arose. According to the Pleiaran information, the early forefathers around 12,000 years ago, the Habranos, were regarded as outcasts because they, as fallible descendants of the makers of the new human species, did not hold to the given laws. Firstly, the Habranos were fallible ones brought together from many different countries, who then formed themselves into a community. And it was not until thousands of years later, under the rule of the Egyptian pharaoh at the time, that they grouped themselves into a people's community, which was called the Hebrews, which was then led out of Egypt around 3,050 years ago under M-O-S-E, Moses. Mose stood in contact with an extraterrestrial and preached a monotheism to the Hebrew community, which he taught by order of the Ishwish at the time, Jehovah. Now, we today call Jehovah God, the creator of the universe. The Meyer information says Jehovah was a member in a lineage of rulers that started out and they dwelled under the Giza Plateau. They're called the Giza Intelligences or the Befath. And I believe the first one that's mentioned in the Meyer material is a man named Jehovan, who had a son, Jehave. And then I believe Jehave had a son, Erasame, who took over. And I'm really leaving out the whole major story, but Erasame, he was thrown out of power by Hen, who was Jehovah, the same person. So Erasame ruled until about 3,010 years ago, before your time reckoning began, until a powerful forced departure was secured for him by a mutineer by the name of Hen, who was called Jehovah in the tongue of the Hebrons. and likewise also gradually within his own ranks, whereas the appellation the cruel one was added. So that's who we mean by Jehovah. He was actually an extraterrestrial. He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with small tactical nuclear weapons. There was also a meteor involved. But let me continue here in the Talmud of Emmanuel. Somehow in the course of the first time, the Hebrew community enlarged the Jehovah monotheism. That is to say, Moses monotheism. With the sun god, monotheistic cult created by Akhenaten or Amenhotep IV, to which many of the Hebrew community adhered themselves, but this then fundamentally changed through the strict monotheism of Moses. For they joined themselves to this, since he paid strict attention to the fact that only his teachings were of correctness in a belief-based manner and were to be followed. It is said that the family tree line of Emmanuel is not a Jewish one, but leads back to the extraterrestrial Sannyasa, whose teaching was that of the truth, of the spirit, and of the life, and not of a god. Now this is where we get into the Nicodemian genealogy, I guess you could say, or the line of Nicodemian. And up on my website, exopoliticsohio.us, if you scroll down, you can see this long graph that was created by Patrick McKnight from creationaltruth.org. And it shows the Nicodemian spirit form. There was actually two sannyasas, and I don't want to get into that too heavily, but Sannyasa fathered Adam. And then we have the whole lineage of Adam, which went to Jacob. And eventually, it's very interesting. If you look at this, you'll have to try to find it. I go out to creationaltruth.org if you want to find this graph. But eventually, through Joseph and Jacob and Mary, and Mary, according to my information, had relations with a extraterrestrial named Gabriel, who was, I guess, an Ishwish, and fathered Emmanuel. And then Emmanuel fathered Muhammad. And then there were obviously other people involved in various, between Muhammad and Billy. But Billy, and if you trace it backward, it's more accurate to say Edward Albert Meyer, and then he had a father who had a father who had a father who had a father, and then Muhammad was in that line, and there was probably a father who had a father, and then Emmanuel, and then Jeremiah and Isaiah called Yezeiah, and Eliah, who we call Elijah, and then there were a Henoch 1 and a Henoch 2, and then it kind of jumps up to Nicodemian. Now there were other incarnations of the Meyer spirit form that I left out of that, and I think this was simplified to a degree just to try to fit it all on one page, and so it made more sense. This is more the genealogy, the lineage of the prophets that came through. Meyer, Muhammad, Emmanuel, Jeremiah, Isaiah, also called Jeziah, Elijah, same person, Hanok 1 and 2, and then eventually back to Notre Dame. And of course, there were other people in between those. But the Meyer spirit form is the one that pops up throughout history, has these lives which help evolve the consciousness of the people on the planet. And Aristotle, Socrates, Rasputin, Galileo, Mendelssohn, Mozart, those were other material lifetimes associated with the Meyer spirit form. So I took us off on a bit of a tangent there. But let me continue here. Unfortunately, the Jewish chronicle corresponds to a tremendous falsification, as is also given in the Pentateuch. For in it, truth concerns a falsified chronicle, which in the Christian form is also called the Bible. It is so tremendously erroneous and falsified that hardly anything true is to be found in it. Everything is bent into a shape on a supposed national chronicle and has no great value. That is, no chronistic and no historical value whatsoever. That's pretty intense. I bet you a lot of Christians would not be happy to hear Billy say that. So we'll pick back up here in chapter 15. What I read to you was Billy's commentary. And Billy's commentary has really helps to fill in the historical gaps. It puts things in context. It's very, very helpful in that sense. These, however, are not part of the brood of snakes and adders who devote themselves to the confused God belief, as also their descendants do for in the present time and also will do henceforth into the distant time into the future. Now, of course, as you probably know, if you've listened to the show before, creation is the term the Meyer teaching uses. Creation is neither male nor female. It's a neutral, positive, Wesenheit being. So in that sense, if you put it into its category, it has probably in some ways more in common with water and sand and stone and certain kinds of energies. The creation, the universal consciousness, has no personality, and it has a small amount of functioning self-determination. And I say a small amount because it follows this incredible pattern of all these creational natural laws, which we've talked about, like love and striving and harmony, the law of harmony, to think in neutral positive terms, and the law of system and order and reincarnation and all of these. The creation, it functions also under something called the Ur-creation. And I don't have the material right in front of me right now. I probably need to review it myself. But the creation also expands for 152.5 trillion years. And during that expansion phase, it's creating human spirit forms, planets, stars, galaxies. And it also contracts for 152.5 trillion years, and it's not creating spirit forms during that time. So let me continue here. So God believers have a more, they look at it in terms of a holy heavenly father, which is more of a personality view of things. With the Meyer material, for example, creation doesn't require anything from the human being. It creates humans particularly the spirit form of the human, to help with its evolution, because the creation is evolving, the universe is evolving. Let me continue here. They follow the confused beliefs and confused teachings they adopted from Moses, who in turn had robbed them from Egypt. The few true fathers are knowers of the truth and of the true knowledge, and of them recognizes only the laws and recommendations of the creation. So again, the laws and recommendations of creations. Love, which is a brotherly family type of love. Striving, which is working, which is your dedication to your own evolution, your dedication to organization. All the aspects of striving, cleaning out your garage is part of striving. Keeping yourself clean is a part of striving. The law of harmony, maintaining the neutral, positive, equalized, balanced thought on all times, and that's what we've always studied in the Might of Thoughts. System and order is the fourth creational natural law. I call it the fourth. It's my numbers only. The system and order says you do things at a certain time. You try to adhere to a schedule where you are dedicated. You know, at certain times you eat, at certain times you sleep, at certain times you do certain things. This is to keep your life structured. Anyway, these are the creational natural laws, the recommendations of creation. Okay, let me continue. They become rare in this land, however, and so can be counted on just one human being's hand. There are only a few of them, and no one's eyes recognizes, and no one hears them. But your eyes are open, for you see with them, and your ears are open, for you hear with them. Truly I say to you, many fair ones and wise ones have wanted to see what you see and yet did not see it. And what you hear, this they also did not hear. So listen to and understand how the secret of the parable about the sower. If someone hears the word of truth about the spirit, spiritual knowledge and the laws and recommendations, and does not understand it, then the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown. And this one's power of thought and intellect, that is for whom it is sown on the pathway. So that's the parable of the sower that Emmanuel taught. And Emmanuel taught with a lot of parables because, how did he put that? These people's, they didn't really thirst for the truth. They didn't, they really had no real interest in the truth. So he would, to those people, he would speak in parables. But let's talk about this explanation here. And this comes from Billy. In the case of the evil one who snatches away, one is not to think of a personified devil, but rather of evil human beings, evil family members, as well as relatives, friends, and acquaintances, and other fellow human beings of the same nature, who challenge everything with those who are connected to the teaching of the truth, the teaching of the spirit, and the teaching of the life, and who live according to the creational natural laws and recommendations. So that these deviate from the way of the truth and from the laws and recommendations and turn to unknowledge, as well as to breaking of the laws and commandments. Again, an example of these laws is striving. And how is it put in the Meyer material that down to the atomic building block of creation, everything is dedicated to the striving, the work, the continual work, the self-improvement. Without a sense, with no striving, you have to focus on striving for something. Without striving, your sense of life goes away. It's called Striving produces delectation, which is a satisfaction. So maybe we'll stop there and we'll pick up with Talmud of Emmanuel next time. Talmud of Emmanuel by Judas Iscariot. And if we jump into the future here a little bit, or into the current time, I should say, we'll go back to the Might of Thoughts, Mach der Gedanken. I've kind of become somewhat planted on a certain page, and this happens quite a bit, because it takes a while. There's something about the Talmud of Emmanuel where the information, it flows, and it's not so, at least, I don't know that it's fair for me to say this, but in the Mind of Thoughts, the material is, it seems very dense, the only word I can come up with. So at least for me, it sometimes takes days and days and days to really absorb like a single line. Like, here's this one line. Once a healthy thinking and feeling has been really created, then a certainty has also been created for the human being, from which it emerges that nothing which arises can really disturb and be disadvantageous. So, what does it say here? Once a healthy thinking and feeling has been created. Once a healthy thinking and feeling has been created. So, you've been studying this book, The Mind of Thoughts, for a long time, and then finally you're starting to get healthy thinking and feeling. Then what Billy's saying here is then a certainty has been created. So you start to feel much more sure about things. And I'm probably not as far as maybe they're describing here. But you feel a sense of certainty about things. Maybe not, at least in my case, not rock certainty yet. But a certainty does come in. And what it says here is, from which emerges that nothing which really arises can disturb and be disadvantageous. I think that's a really hell of an accomplishment to get to that point. And it also, this certainty which spurs on a constant forward progress for the striving. That's something I have noticed, is now I'm getting a little more certainty, and the striving that I talk about here is, you get more motivation. It's kind of like enthusiasm in ways created by the anticipation of success. Enthusiasm is also created by the creating an imaginary picture in your mind. And the Semyase Silver Star Center was created with an imaginary picture in the mind. So this certainty that you start to feel after a while spurs on a constant forward progress in the striving for that which is higher, because in the certainty, the success which is eventually contained in the forward progress in the striving can already be seen, but certainly is created from the attitude of one's consciousness. Indeed, by the acquisition from actual knowledge of a decisive conviction which becomes one's firm attitude, and with that's one's opinion and certainty. I think this comes across as egotistical sometimes to people that are completely outside of the Meyer teaching. Because one of the things that the Meyer information teaches us is that our thoughts are incredibly powerful. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their mind alone, every conceivable thing can come to fruition. What I mindfully think manifests for me. So you come across, and they think of you as egotistical, but really you're just absolutely certain of the power of your thoughts. And it's true. All of our thoughts are incredibly powerful. If you think negative thoughts, you can bring really negative things into your life, and people do that. They don't know where the negative things come from. But many times the negative things come from the rotation of negative thinking, negative feelings, very unhealthy. Let me continue. Therefore, in this world, there is basically only one single effective certainty. Indeed, that of one's identification with the one and only reality which is possible for the human being, the knowledge and wisdom of one's own consciousness, which has been the human being's power, might, and refuge since time immemorial, and will also remain so for all future time. So there it is. It's the power of your thoughts. What I mightfully think manifests for me. I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. And here's a good bit of wisdom for you. I do not allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. Let me continue down here on the bottom of this particular page, page 334. Which, like I said, I've been hung up on for quite some time. Become, however, a healthy psyche determines very much in regard to being healthy and being sick. So it's so important to keep neutral, positive thoughts, especially during this time. I like to tell myself, I am healthy, I am strong. However, a healthy psyche determines very much in regard to being healthy and being sick. As we've already explained earlier, right thoughts and right feelings are therefore able to promote health across the board, while in certain cases, wrong thoughts have an encouraging effect on illnesses and can promote them. And exactly in this regard, there are many human beings who tend and nurture illness-related thoughts and allow them to stream out of their consciousness directly into their bodies. So remember, speak to your own consciousness. That's why I say I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic. I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. I do not allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. I steer my thoughts like a captain steers his ship. I nurture my thoughts. I strengthen my thoughts. I clarify my thoughts. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought to fruition. So I hope you've been enjoying The Might of Thoughts and the Talmud of Emmanuel. Two very, very important books that we have been reading. And you have been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a great afternoon.